Hey yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. Once again, I am Martin, and I am joined by, he's the king of the casters. He's the chief defender of the faith. He's Mr. Brett Podcast, man with the golden voice. How many other nicknames you got, Brett?
Probably 9 or 10, but you know, nobody cares about my nicknames. They really just care about our guests. And that's, and hell, that's...
How many names do you want to share?
Yeah, there's no, this was good. This totally worked, but I'm happy to share your name. Ultimately, we have Mike Mostert joining us again. He is here to talk about In Theory, a wonderful guitarist, wonderful guy. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, guys. It's no complaints, just things are great. You know, things are great. That's it. You know, just keeping busy with everything. No complaints.
Well, that's good, especially, you know, I mean, these days now that we're starting to kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel, I mean, I guess it must be nice to kind of bring all the work that you were able to do, you know, during the pandemic and kind of, you know, I guess start to put it out towards the masses and see, like, get into touring and that kind of thing eventually.
Yeah, we're getting close. We're about we just finished up two more songs, and I think we're gonna do two more, and then we'll put out the full record at that point, the first In Theory record.
Well, that's cool. I mean, of course, the River Song is the last one that that we heard, and you know, really like that song. It's again a totally different vibe from some of the other work that In Theory's done, but great. Great backgrounds, and just love the vibe of it, really.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I think it crosses you know, different genres than the other songs that you've heard. Yeah, you know, we were able to incorporate a little bit of a little blues in it, a little bit gospel, and still keep it very In Theory like. You know, it's still like, you know, still got the Cornell vocals, and we're still kind of heavy, but we got to incorporate more layers in our music.
So then when it comes down to In Theory, like, how, besides the Cornell vocals, like, how do you kind of, you know, would you illustrate what In Theory means to you?
Well, for me, what's important in theory, not just, I guess, lyrically and musically, is to actually create layers in our music and depth to our music, to be a one-trick pony, you know. And I want, like, the listener to, you know, when they're listening to In Theory and they put it in the headphones, that every time they hear the music, they'll hear something new. They'll hear, like, oh, I didn't know there was a keyboard doing this. So I didn't hear the vocals doing this the first 100 times I heard it, or I didn't hear the guitar doing this or that. You know, and there's a lot of little nuances that we have in our music, which I think really makes us kind of unique, you know, in what we do. And that's what I'm trying to capture, that you know, it's like a cool little journey that every time you hear it, it's something brand new, a brand new experience for the listener.
I suppose the song then is never truly done. Even after it's released, it might feel like it's never truly done.
You know, that's a yes and no. I think at some point, you know, it's a little bit of like love and hate and pain and pleasure all in the same sentence. And but you get to some point where you're like, okay, this is it. This is, I'm happy with this. And but getting there sometimes is a project. You know, I mean, this last song, which we'll announce at some point, you know, we have some guest drummers on a couple of the tracks. You know, we did, you know, three 18-hour days of mixes.
Wow.
Where it was just getting, you know, every little, where, you know, the bass was a little too loud versus the drums versus the vocals. And every time I would add a part, then I'm like, okay, now we have to change this other part. But the last 3 days, we did close to, I would start literally at 5 p.m. and get home at maybe about 10 in the morning or so. But the results of the last two, we're really ecstatic. It seems like it's an ongoing evolution of the band. you know, it seems like what we're as we're progressing and we're looking back to the initial songs when we first spoke, you are hearing an evolution of the band, and I think we're just, you know, we're just getting to that. It feels like what we heard before is just the tip of the iceberg.
Would you describe yourself as a perfectionist?
On certain things, when it comes to mixing, I would say I try to be a perfectionist. But when it comes to like a performance, I'm just, for me, it's more of capturing an emotion. And for me, what's really important about that, so I think music's got to move you. Whether, you know, when you put on, it doesn't matter, you know, whatever style it is, music should make you, you know, scream. It should make you want to kick over a chair. It should make you want to cry, or make you happy, or put you in you know, a different mood. But it has to move you first. So for me, that's always the first objective. It's, you know, did we get the emotions across? And then from there, then I start perfecting, you know, the mix and instrumentation around the emotion.
I guess it must be a little easier to help convey that emotion when you have a singer like Tony.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And Tony just keeps getting better and better. And I think Tony is, yeah, I mean, you know, he's, I guess it was, I'm not sure if I told you this on the last, you know, conversation, but, you know, he's been averaging almost doing the tracks like 50 to 75 times per song. And, yeah, I think there's many times where he wants to choke me. but I also know how great he could be. And, you know, and I just, I think sometimes he doesn't realize how good he is. And you know, and I feel that's my job as a producer, is to bring out the best I think I can bring out of Tony. And there's times where he's like, oh, man, this is great. I'm like, no, it's not good. You know, or the opposite, where I'm like, you nailed it. He's like, really? You like that? I'm like, yeah, keep it. Don't change anything, because you captured the emotion. So it's yeah, it's a yin yang of both. But yeah, with Tony is, if you want to call it, if I'm the, you know, a painter and he's one of the colors, you know, on the canvas, having somebody like him, you know, gives me, you know, like a plethora of so many different colors to the palette to create a great piece of art.
Well, yeah, because I was going to ask what it was like to produce all the music. I mean, but, you know, just besides Tony, but produce yourself and then get everybody else's performances. Like, is it typical to ask for, like, say, 75 versions from everybody, or is that just a Tony special?
well, Tony's extra special. I don't know. well, because, you know, the singer is, you know, the face of the band and the sound of the band, a big sound, of course. But I've been, how do you describe it as, hands-on, very hands-on in my, personality, to put it very nicely. But I've, you know, but again, but everybody's equal in that talent or even better, you know, and than myself or Tony. And it's just these musicians that, you know, we're getting to work with are just ridiculous musicians. But even as great as they are, and I know that they're not used to it, but I'll sit like 5 feet away from them while they're playing or they're singing, and giving them, like, you know, like verbal cues or head cues, or okay, I don't like this, I like this, try it like this. So I'm with them like every step. You know, I'm not doing it the old style where you're mailing your tracks in, and then, like these days, the technology is so good where you can just, okay, here's the track, play guitar over it or play bass on it. I want to have like an interaction with the, you know, whatever, whether it's a keyboard or a bass or a drummer, and basically, you know, convey like what is important for me in the song, or what I'm trying to get across in the song, and make sure that they don't lose, you know, what the point of the song is. So for me, always the song is the most important. And sometimes I think people can sometimes lose the sight of that because, you know, they're listening to their own instrumentation and forgetting about the song. So
tell us,
I'm sort of there to remind them.
Well, tell us about the other members then. Who else is making the music with you and what they bring individually?
So a big part of the project has been this guy, Clayton Ivey. And Clayton is one of the original, or they call it the Swamper Guys or the Fame Gang out of Muscle Shoals. And, you know, he's played with everybody from, you know, like Aretha and Percy Sledge to up to, I don't know, Toby Keith and that. But he sold something about like 400 million records.
Wow.
And, which is pretty good, you know, I guess.
Yeah, he's done okay. You know? Yeah, and he's also been a producer at Motown and produced the Temptations. His resume is pretty crazy. But down in Muscle Shoals, while there's so many great players here, he's really considered like one of the elite guys out of the bunch. And no matter what he does, he can elevate a track, you know, which is, you know, there's so many great players, but they don't necessarily know how to elevate a track. They know how to play great, but not necessarily elevate a track. And no matter what I've thrown at him, whether I'm doing In Theory or a blues song or R&B song, he's always able to elevate the track, whether it's, you know, from being creative or bringing an attitude. So he brings that. And then our main background vocalist is Lanisha Latimer, and she's been with Stevie Wonder for the last 14 years. So, you know, and Stevie's done a few things, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, one or two.
And, right. So, and you could hear, I mean, you hear her all over the River Song, because there's many spots where she's almost taken over the lead vocal, you know, in that song as well, with her ad-libs. And she's really funny because she's very identical to Tony, meaning they don't think they're great, but they're great. You know, so that's a really... I always told them it would be a nightmare to actually have to record both of them at the same time, because they would both think that they are like the two worst singers on the planet. And then meanwhile, they'd be having a mutual admiration club of each other saying, oh my God, Lanisha's incredible, and vice versa. And Lanisha's like, oh my God, Tony's incredible. But meanwhile, their own performers, they're thinking they're the worst singers. But so that's a very interesting dynamic with them. But, you know, she brings a lot of nuances, you know, to the, you know, her background vocals. And it may sound like a very strange thing, but she actually knows how to be a background singer, meaning the way she'll purposely leave off like a tail end of a line so that the lead singer can finish the breath or finish whatever the vocal thought. Where most lead singers, if they ask, okay, do the backgrounds, it sounds like five lead singers all singing. So I learned working with her that there is an art to it. And, yeah, so that's what, you know, she brings to it. And the other thing with her, I'd say, is she never really listened to rock music until she did the In Theory. So she's looking at this like it's such a brand new adventure. She's just... The excitement that she's hearing, like hearing not only In Theory, but hearing for the first time like Zeppelin or, you know, Soundgarden or any rock band. You know, I just send her songs all the time. Check out this band. Check out that band. And it's like she's hearing it for the first time. And to see it through her eyes is kind of exciting, you know. And then we have this bass player. His name is Colin Lott. And he's the biggest surprise out of everybody. That's when I was first working on the demos. Usually what I do is I take a drum loop, I'm laying down guitar tracks. And what happened was my engineer didn't want to come into the studio because of the pandemic. So he goes, well, I can have my assistant come in. He'll help out. And the kid came in, he was doing the drum loops. And I said to him, I said, you know what? This song's, you know, it'd be cool if I heard it with bass. And he goes, well, I play a little bass, and it turns out he plays a whole lot of bass. You know, so he's got a little bit like a John Paul Jones meets DeLeo from Stone Temple Pilots. But also what I didn't know about him prior was he was also the assistant engineer on the last Rival Sons record that won a Grammy for Best Rock Record. And now the kid just won another Grammy for an Americana record. And it looks like he's, you know, he's going to be up for a third Grammy. So this entire time, I thought he was just, you know, assistant engineer, a junior assistant engineer, essentially. And it turns out, like you said, a great bass player and a lot more well-rounded than we were expecting, and a perfect fit to our music. So, where, like I said, I feel like he plays like with John Paul Jones, but with the note selection of the bass player from Stone Temple Pilots.
Hmm.
And then it plays a little bit of the, what they call it, the Muscle Shoals. They call it a shuffle beat, and then he plays with that. And drummer-wise, on the River Song, that's Andy Sinisi, and you know his main gig is right now is Missing Persons at Frankie Valli, out of all things. But yeah, and you know he's a little bit more like the Swiss Army knife of drummers. So he'll play, you know, he'll do like the Sebastian Bach tour, but then he'll also play with Frankie Valli, and then he'll do Missing Persons. So he brings the whole cross section of so many influences, and he does everything great. And then we had another drummer from Muscle Shoals, and he's sort of the equivalent of a Clayton Ivey. And we call him the kid because he's only been on about 500 records, not 2,000 records like the other guys in Muscle Shoals. And he's on the next two tracks. And then we just end up, I can sort of announce it on your show, but we just finished up on this new song that's going to come out on the record. We won't release it as a single. But we have Vinny Appice with us as well.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So, yeah, so it's – and they're all bringing, like, you know, something that still makes it in theory.
No, I mean, it's fantastic. And working with people like that, I mean, it must help you elevate your game as a guitarist.
I always think I try. I do my best, you know. Yeah, I feel it's like I feel like I always get a master class getting to work with these people. I don't take it for granted, and I try to listen to everybody's approach, and I'm soaking it in and soaking it in. And yeah, so I'm very cognizant of I shouldn't suck. don't suck. Whatever you do, don't suck on guitar.
Yeah.
But it's like an instant master class, you know, because you get to. On one aspect, you know, I'm a fan, and on the other aspect, I have to lead. So I'm watching and learning. You know, it's, you know what I'm saying? So it's like you're the master and you're a student, all in the same breath.
Do you ever catch yourself where you're just like kind of sitting there watching in awe, and then you realize like, oh, wait, sorry, I have to be the leader again here.
Yeah, there's moments. But there's more moments of when I'm adding a new instrument. And actually, I forgot to name one guy. His name is Thomas Matnick. He's been our main cello guy and of the quartet. But we just did the track, I said, you know, with Vinny, and we laid down 33 tracks of cello. So he's doing the lower notes, the mid notes, and the sounds like violin. And there's 33 tracks. But yeah, so that's where sometimes I'll get you know, caught off guard, where I'm just like, oh my God, the cello sounds amazing. Or I'm listening to Vinny play, I'm like, oh yeah, that kick drum is grooving. Or it could be Anthony Clayton's doing some crazy stuff. Where, I mean, when that guy plays, it feels like he's blowing up like you can see like smoke and fire coming out of the speaker of the Hammond. So you get that initial reaction, like, oh my God, this is cool, that's cool, that's cool. But then you have to sort of like, okay, now where are they going to fit in the song? But you do get that moment where you're just like, wow, these people are all badass. It's like, wow, okay. And then I have to reel it in and make everybody fit where they need to fit.
How do you present the song to everybody? And then how do you let them, you know, find their way within the song?
Well, what we do is, musically, I write the majority. You know, I write to a drum loop, and then Tony and I fine tune pretty much what the structure of the song is going to be. And then from there, as strange as it may sound, I never let anybody hear the track prior to coming to the studio. So once they walk into the studio for the first time, they're hearing the track for the first time. And I do that because I want your initial gut emotional response of how you're going to play. So they hear the structure, and then I let them do what they got to. Like, that's the very first thing I'll do, like the first two or three times. I won't say nothing. I'll just let them interpret the way that they want to interpret the song based on what's there already. And then from there, I start fine-tuning. Like, okay, you know, many times, you know, we'll just do the whole thing from scratch again. But always let them be them first. And then I start picking out spots like, oh, I like what you did here. Let's leave that there, but maybe do something like that in the fourth measure. Or same thing, you know, with, it doesn't matter whether it's a cello or a bass player or harmonies. You know, I just start finding spots that I like, things that I like, and then sometimes where they're singing it, or it could be anything where they're playing it, is in a completely different part of the song. And then I already hear in my head as a producer, no, that should go as an intro, or that should be at the end of the song, not in the middle, and take it from there. Like I said, it could be, it's a lot of pain and pleasure with that.
Did they ever have a problem, you know, not hearing the song before? Was that ever kind of like a contentious point, or is it just they're such professionals that they don't mind?
So far, nobody's mind. At least not to my face, they haven't complained. I think everybody's reaction has been like, this is a really cool mic, you know. And the thing that blows me away as a producer and a writer of the music is the fact that they're so appreciative of it, and they're like, you know, thank you for letting me play real music, or thank you for challenging me, you know, because a lot of these guys, you know, especially the Muscle Shoals there, they call doing sessions with a smile. They do the session and they leave. They do the session and they, you know, they try to get in as many as they can, pretty much like Nashville or, you know, and as, you know, many of the, like the session guys do. And with these guys, you know, I'll challenge them, you know, even though there's typically they would come in and, you know, probably do their track in a half hour to an hour. They'll be there 4 hours, 6 hours. The drummer last time, he was there for, I think, 12 hours last time.
Wow.
And but the fact that they're so dedicated to getting, you know, my vision is really cool, you know, and not only putting the effort, but also thanking me for challenging them, you know, because I think, you know, it's like a blessing and a curse, right? You know, whether it's, you know, a Vinny Appice or a Clayton or Lanisha, they're known for a certain style and they're put in a box. And then I'm telling them, well, you don't have to be in that box. You be you. Don't think you have to be this Muscle Shoals R&B type of player. You know, just play like, you know, like when you're first playing. And you can see it. You can see the smile on their face. You can see the joy on, even after a 10-hour day. I mean, they are just so, the enthusiasm, even after, like I said, a long day is unparalleled, you know. So I really think that they do appreciate it.
So then when it comes down to, like, talking music, I mean, we all know that, like, music, I mean, certainly with music theory and all that stuff, but there's so many different ways of describing something. And did you have to learn a certain way to talk to these people?
It's a yes and a no on that, depending on who's working on things. So, so for instance, like Tony doesn't really know music theory. He knows basic, like, you know, if you know a major or a minor, that's it. But he doesn't realize, you know, like, well, you could do a minor third, a minor seventh, a minor, like, he doesn't really know that. Everything is all instinct. And Lanisha, same deal. Even though she's with Stevie Wonder, you know, a musical genius, she doesn't understand music theory at all. And then you take somebody like Clayton, and he's a wizard. I mean, he's one of those, I mean, this a ridiculous, and I've never met somebody so knowledgeable in music theory where, you know, we had this sort of like running joke down here where, actually was at the very like last note, I think on the River Song, he hits this chord and he goes, yeah, this one should be like a G minor, 7th, 11th, 8th, 9th, whatever, some weird complicated chord. And we all look at each other and we're like, and none of us honestly knew what the hell he was talking. We're like, yeah, that's what it should be. Yeah, do that. So, but yeah, but everybody's a little bit different, you know, and also in Muscle Shoals in Nashville, it's the only place where they actually, they write their charts different than anywhere else in the world. It's not based on notes. It's based on a number system.
Hmm. That's interesting.
So you'll see, like, it. So, like, you know, like, if say if you studied at Berkeley or Juilliard, I mean, you're taught to read notes and measures, and you look at the clef and, you know, and sharps and flats. Down in Muscle Shoals and Nashville, I mean, they use the identical, and Memphis as well. They use the same identical system, and it's based on this 8 numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 8 notes in the scale. And the way they determine major and minor is by symbols. So they're like a little triangle means minor. If there's nothing, it means major. If you got a dash, it means could mean diminished. And then and it's kind of wild. They don't even put the measures. It's going to be 4 or 6 or 8. It's very interesting how they do that. You know, except if you look at Clayton's chart, he's one that's, apparently, he actually writes like little notations, musical notations underneath his numbers and other hieroglyphics. And again, it is a running joke here, even amongst the elite. If you can understand a Clayton chart, you've sort of like you've made it. It's really complicated. And but I did get the pleasure of actually. I wrote out 2 charts for him. So I thought that was actually kind of cool that I was able to write my version of a chart, which is even, you know, the mic system. It's not based on Juilliard or Berkeley or Muscle Shoals in Nashville. It was a mic chart. But he was able to understand it. And, you know, so he was appreciative. And I did that when I did a song with, Manisha, with this other guy, David Hood, who I think is like the 8th most influential bass player in history, I think, by Rolling Stone. And he played on a couple of the songs I did with her on the R&B project. So that's why I started writing some charts for the guys. But so it's sort of like in between a standard chart and a Muscle Shoals chart.
You talk about your vision, that they're helping you, you know, formulate your vision. And is that a vision that you have for each individual song, or is it an overarching vision for, in theory, that you have?
It's for every song. Every song is, I feel like, is completely different. That's how we're viewing it. It's the best way of describing it. It's not an overall sound, and that's something, again, Tony and I are very cognizant about, where you know, if more blues comes out on it, great. If more metal comes out on it, fine. You know, or if it's more poppy, we don't want to put ourselves in a box. You know, whatever we're feeling, we're going to go with that and start taking it one song at a time.
So then what's your process from a guitar perspective and just kind of getting the riffs out and getting what you feel like you want to hear out?
My process, well, it's very similar to, you know, in a way, I won't say in a way like with Tony, but I'm that guy where I just write a lot of riffs, and I do it a very antiquated way. I do it on my iPhone. So I'll get into these writing sessions in my living room, essentially, off the couch, and I leave my iPhone, and I just start, like, noodling off of riffs. And I just start saving riffs, and out of that, I start transcribing it into my notebook as well. So I have the songs, you know, in the notebook, and I have it on my phone. And I just start writing and writing and writing. And I think when we were going into the first set of sessions, I had close to, I think, about 70 pages of songs. And out of the 70, you know, we narrowed it down to 5.
Wow.
And then when we started this next batch, I felt that was a little bit rusty. And I felt that was, I was like, ah, Tony, I'm not coming with any good ideas. I don't have anything. And sure enough, I went back on my phone, and apparently I must have written, you know, like 30 new songs. So out of that, these, you know, we picked 2 so far.
That's crazy. Yeah, definitely got a hard, you know, hard view of the stuff that you're creating for sure. But I suppose that's the best way, you know, a hard eye on it, you know, is the best way to make sure that you come up with the best stuff.
Yeah, and many times, like, you know, where that's where I think Tony and I are similar. Many times I'm doing a riff and I'm not liking it. I'll send it to him. I go, what do you think? He's like, oh my God, like that. Oh, that'll be a cool song. Or when I was doing the mixing on another song, I was there with the engineer. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm not really liking these ideas. I played it for him. He's like, he goes, oh, that's that idea, that idea, that idea. That's one song. That idea. And I played him like maybe 15 of those, you know, those 30 ideas. And apparently they were good enough. So, but anyway, so 2 of them are done, and 2 more are done, and then we will try to finish up the next 2 in the next, you know, probably hopefully in the next month. And then in the interim, we're working on a new video as well that'll come out with the next single, and that's, you know, we're almost there. You know, I've been putting little footage of that on social media, but yeah, so we're working on that as well. And then once that's all done, then we're going to revisit, you know, doing the festivals and doing that circuit again, and get back to where we were in the pre-pandemic. Because prior to that, but, you know, thank God we have a lot of great friends in the industry and other bands that, you know, not necessarily take us under their wing, but you know, invite us on the road, and, you know, share the booking agent to get us on the road and get to do some, you know, special events and festivals. So, but once we're done with the full record, then we'll go and do that.
Well, that sounds great. I mean, I can't wait to hopefully have a chance to go see you in one of these festivals.
Yeah. So now, are you guys, we're in Canada?
Yeah, we're in Calgary, Alberta.
Where is that?
Calgary, Alberta, Canada. So, yes. Just in...
Oh, Alberta.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
So, yeah, I don't know.
I still, yeah, but,
we'll have to travel a little bit.
I saw a Bakersfield phone number. I'm like...
yes. Yes, that's just the way Skype works for us.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So now, is Canada is back to normal, or what's the...
Slower probably.
It's
right.
You know, July 11th, I think it is, that they're lifting all the restrictions here where we are. So
Okay. Theoretically,
that's when Canada, I think by percentage now, has the highest vaccination rate. They've been really aggressive lately on it. So we're getting there, but it was slow for a long time, and nothing really opened up. But when it opens up, it's going to be amazing.
I think so. You know, but you know what's strange? So most of my time since the pandemic, I've been spending most of my time in Muscle Shoals in Alabama, and for the most part, maybe only like 3 months where everything was really shut down. But really, for the last 7 months, all the restaurants have been open. You can go see live music, and so it was really, I mean, you'd see more people with masks, you know, but you could go see bands on the weekend and it would be packed.
We haven't
and,
been
you know,
there.
So it's been sort of normal here for at least, you know, almost close to 7 months or so.
Wow.
but definitely not New York or California or you know, many other states. But here and there, they're a whole different, you know, for lack of better words, a whole different breed down here.
Yeah, well, we had a big run of that Brazilian variant here that hit. And I think that freaked a lot of people out because it was different and didn't know how well the vaccine would work on it and everything like that, too. So, yeah, everybody's, I don't know, probably Alberta's probably the closest you're going to get to Alabama normally in Canada. So.
Gotcha. So you like the south of Canada?
Basically, yeah. We're the prairies, right? So it's like, right. I think so, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think there's a new variant that came out of what, India now as well, right? A new strain as well.
So. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's gonna be interesting for quite a while, but it will just be nice to get some semblance of normalcy for sure, especially when it comes to live music.
The Calgary Stampede here that happens every year is big, you know, festival. It's happening. It's not fully opened up like it usually is, where it's about 100,000 people a day that visit it, but, you know, it's going to be opened up a little bit, and conventions and the folk festivals happening. That is a tradition here that's finally going on after being canceled last year.
Oh, that's good.
We're getting there. I mean, I can't wait to, I'll go to all these things just because I've been cooped up for so long.
Right. Yeah, I think I've been lucky. At least, you know, like I said, down here, I could go see a band on the weekend or, the real big places were not open, but I can still go to a club that had 1,000 people.
That's pretty good. 1,000 people is pretty good,
yeah.
We haven't done that in a long time.
And, you know, and still, like, the odd thing is, and this is when they still had the mask mandate, so you'd walk into the club, and you had to wear your mask, but as soon as you got in and started ordering drinks, nobody wore masks.
Yeah, I guess it was always so interesting, always such an interesting, you know, like how that works, really.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I guess you aren't going to take a drink through your arm. You could, but
right,
it's not going to
exactly.
be the same.
But you know, I do want to ask you one thing: like, how many guitars do you have? And also, like, how do you choose which guitar has the right sound for which song?
Ooh, that is a good question. I have the small collection, I think, compared to other my other guitar buddies. I have only, I think, 16 guitars. So I'm considered actually on the low scale. So I have 16. But at the studio, which works out great. It's only like a mile and a half from here. He has close to, I think, 300 guitars there.
Wow.
So I bring always like my favorite five from the house. And then the other thing that he has a lot of old vintage amps. And that is more of the secret sauce than anything. And experimenting with all the amps. And what we'll do is many times we'll set up where we think, like, you know, let's check out these six amps. And we'll have them all mic'd simultaneously. And then we're able to turn on and turn off each amp where I don't have to unplug the guitar. You know, so we can actually A-B really quick, A-B, C-D, E, all the different tones, which is a very kind of cool way of recording. And then from that, I'm like, okay, I like that amp, but it needs a thicker sound. So, you know, if I, you know, and then I can look at, well, does it need humbuckers or does it need single coils or will it use this type of sound? And then I'll take it from there. And then I'm working off of blends. And then, because I know like one guitar, you know, one particular guitar is more of a mid-range sound. One will have a little bit more, you know, bass to it. Some has a little bit more bite. And depending on what I'm going for, you know, I try to get like a balance of those. And then, you know, depending on the song, sometimes I'm bringing out a little bit more of the bite or bringing out more mid-range or trying to create a contrast within the song.
Yeah, it must be a lot of fun to kind of, you know, kind of geek out and test all those different different elements and just hear them even and give you ideas.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, you know, and the guy there is, I mean, he's definitely like a musical genius, or well, he's a genius, and meaning, like he has all this great gear, like all these old analog pedals and amps, like stacks, like all around his room, like keyboards and all this stuff, and I'll just like, you know, same thing like you were saying, I'm geeking out. I'm like, what does that thing do? We're like, I don't know. Let's plug it in. What does this thing do? And we plug it in, and you know, we're able to discover a lot of really cool pedals that's on the interior stuff. That, you know, like some of the guitars, especially on the newer stuff, is really heavy. But I'm playing it through a very clean amp, where an amp with no gain at all. And then I discover like an old pedal, an old, you know, hand wired analog pedal that I'm running through a clean amp, and it's something that you would almost do like in the early 70s, where, you know, to some degree. But yeah, so it's a lot of fun just experiment with the different combinations.
I mean, and it's the fantastic thing with music. I mean, it's that there's so many different ways of reaching the end result that, you know, it must be just amazing to be able to play and to just keep learning new ways.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, every time you do it, it is different, and you learn something different. You know, and sometimes you're the I'm going to say the procedure, but the order is not the same. Sometimes you're like, I'm going to go for the mid-range-y type of stuff first, and then I'm going to add the other type of tone. And sometimes you're doing it completely opposite. You know, so. Yeah, it's always a fun learning experience, and then when it starts coming together, I think that's where, for me, that's what gets me really excited. Like, when it's really starting to take shape, you're like, oh yeah, now this is what it's supposed to sound like. This is what I'm hearing in my head. You know, this is what we've been working on for the last, you know, two or three 18-hour days to get to sound just like this, and. But yeah, that's how I get really excited, and I think then it's sort of like a different adrenaline kicks in. You're like, yeah, this sounds great. And then you just want to keep going and keep going.
So now, what is a bigger rush then? Is it that moment where you kind of feel like you have the song, and you hear it, you know, it's what is in your head, or then the moment where you play that song for the fans?
I think for me, it's when I achieve, well, it's a few things. There's two steps. There's one, when I discover something new, and I said, oh, let's try this with this keyboard. Or, you know what? Let's add this guitar part. And it works. And something I would say I would never play, or something you don't think would work in a million years, and it works. Like, that gets me so excited. Like, oh my God, that works. And then from that, it just gets the creativity going, like, oh, let's, because of that, let's do this, this, and this, and this, and then it starts coming together. That really gets me super excited. And then when it's about done, where I feel like, yeah, it's done, that to me is the ultimate. I think the process of doing it sometimes is not as fun, but when it's finally finished, that's what really does it for me. And then what I try to do is, in at that point, I really hope that the fans and people and hosts and TV, you know, TV and radio and so forth, that people like it, you know, that they hear what I would call the madness in my mind, or, you know, the vision in my head, however you want to define it. You know, I just hope at the end of the day, all the efforts that I put in and what is bringing joy to me musically is doing the same for the people that are listening.
Well, I can say,
and
from,
of course, it's icing when they, I can say, and if they like it, of course, then it's like, oh, cool, I did something right.
Yeah, I was going to say that for myself, I know that especially, you know, the River Song, I love that song, and I can, you know, I can certainly listen to it a bunch, but I mean, Heroes and all that stuff. There's so many good songs that I've heard from you guys, and I can't wait to hear more.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we're excited to get the some new stuff out. Like I said, you know, four more are already done. So two more to go.
Getting in the home stretch now, but you know, Mike,
We are in a home stretch.
we just want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your passion with us. And, you know, it's so obvious, and I just love that. But we want to give you the chance to tell everybody how they can keep up with you, how they can keep up with In Theory, and where they can find you.
Well, In Theory has a Facebook page, and they can also go to my own page, the Mike Mostert Facebook page. But the majority of the stuff is living on the In Theory page. But on the Facebook page, you'll see a lot of stuff that's not on the In Theory page, where you'll see extra snippets of stuff. And then, obviously, you know, In Theory originated from the myself doing the Go-Go record. So I put a lot of In Theory stuff behind the scenes, you know, videos and recordings, and that also lives on the Go-Go page. But you can just go to the In Theory Facebook page or the Instagram page for all the latest and greatest from In Theory.
Sure, and I urge everybody to do that, and check out the GoGo page for sure, because those behind the scenes videos, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff there, absolutely.
Thank you. Thanks.
But yep,
Yeah,
thank
in
you.
fact, I think I just posted the behind the scenes of the upcoming video. That's I think people will be surprised when they hear that. So, but it's living right now on the GoGo page as the last post, and yeah, I advise people just to click on it, and they'll be surprised, I think, because it's when they hear the song, the because it's only the intro of the song. But the intro is so different than what the song becomes.
Oh, that's
So
awesome.
I think people are going to expect one thing, and it's not.
Nice.
Well, I'm Mike
Well,
Mostert. Thank you so much.
yeah, thank you, and
Well, thank you guys, and
we're
I
definitely
appreciate
traveling to
all.
a festival. Sorry, we're definitely going to travel to a festival to see you at some point. Promise.
And we have to get some, we have to book something up by you guys too.
Yeah, for
Yep,
sure. I
that would be
mean,
great.
you know, meet in the middle, something like
Right,
that
right, right. So are you on the East Coast or West Coast? Where
Closer to the West
are
Coast.
you looking? Okay. So how far are you from like Washington State or?
We can drive there in a day, like half a
Okay.
day kind of thing, you know. Yeah, so
Good.
not
Yeah,
bad.
not so bad.
So.
You know, right below us is what's right below us actually, Brett? Is it Montana?
Montana's directly below us, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha,
So we're just
gotcha.
north of Montana.
So you're really like in the prairies of
Like
Canada.
I
Oh
said, we
yeah.
really are.
Yep, totally are.
You're not kidding.
No.
You are definitely. I thought you were just making a joke. No, you're definitely not kidding.
No, we're home
No,
on
we're
the
not.
range.
No.
It's
This is Alberta's the redneck capital of Canada. There's no question about it.
But
So
yeah.
now, is there a distinguishable
accent between, say, where you live versus Toronto or,
Yeah,
you
there
know,
is, yeah.
Calgary or Ontario, like, you know, in different parts of Canada? Is it like, yeah, obviously, there's a big difference between New York versus Midwest versus the South or California.
Yeah,
Yeah.
there's a lot of variety for sure. And I know, like, you know, Martin and I don't hear it ourselves, but we've certainly been told that we have accents, and it's just like, oh, interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah, I not really. It's like almost you have a closer to almost like a California, you know, maybe Midwest accent.
It gets more almost like you get into northern Ontario and stuff, you get this almost sing-songy type. Sounds almost like, you know, what people think, like Fargo or something like that, you know,
Gotcha.
that movie. And
Right.
yeah,
Right.
and as you
That's a
get
great
east,
movie, by
get right to
the
the East Coast, it's almost, you know, sounding a little more like Britain and that type of English accent. And yeah,
way.
it's a bit all over the place. But
Gotcha.
I don't think there's as many dialects as you and different accents as you have in America.
Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. It's still an adjustment being down here on how the culture and certain mannerisms of speaking, you know. I always make a joke, you know, what a way to end the interview, right? So, like, if you go to a drive-through, for instance, And, you know, when you order, you say, okay, I want to get, you know, whatever. I want to get a burger or I want to get whatever you're going to order. But whenever you get to the drink portion, they always say, what to drink? Like, what to drink? Like, you should almost, if you're going to do that, like, shouldn't you say, like, what to eat? Right? But no matter where you are, no matter which drive through you go through, they all say that. What to drink?
And then the other thing
they do is just, they like to emphasize the word it. So, like, you know, we're going to go to it. We're going to go it. And but the fine thing is, say, like, you're talking about the festival, like, say, like, hey, I'm going to go to the so-and-so festival. And then how they would actually reply back to you is like, yeah, we're going to go to it. Instead of saying, hey, yeah, we're going to go to the festival together. It's more like, yeah, we're going to go to it. So I find that very interesting. So,
well, we'll go to it and meet
right.
at some point.
Right, we're all going to go to it.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to make sure you go up on the it.
Up on the it side. Yep, you bet.
A.
Right, right.
Because we're Canadian.
Yeah, right.
We got to finish A.
So yeah, we'll just
right,
we'll
you just got
toss
the A's and they got the
A.
It.
Right. As you can probably tell,
much,
we actually don't use that
like
very
that.
Much here.
So I think that's been a pretty funny experience, you know, amongst many other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those things are always fantastic. Well, you know, such a great part of traveling is to hear those things.
Right, right. And, like, you know, it's just so many funny things. It's just like, if you're going to go to a bank or anything, a supermarket, just be prepared. Like, it's not, you know, like, it's not going to take you 3 minutes. And you could be the only person online, but they'll still want to have a conversation with you for 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And even if there's a line behind you of 20 people, 30 people, no, they just want to have a talk with everybody, whether they know you or not. They just have a conversation. And that you see almost everywhere. You know, no place is, for the most part, not an exception to that.
Fantastic. But we like talking. We enjoy it a lot. But
right.
That's what we do.
Yeah. But Mike, you
sometimes
know, once again,
you just want to get in and out.
Sometimes,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we thank you so
you.
Much for coming on the
thanks
show
again,
and and talking, and
a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we look forward to talking
and
again.
And I appreciate the time, and I appreciate all the kind words about the music, and you know, I mean, for you guys to take the time to really listen to the stuff, and I'm glad you guys liked it, like the River Song, and you know, hopefully you liked the newer stuff when it comes out as well. And you know, and thanks for having me on again. You know, it's really appreciative. You know, I don't take it for granted that you know that you guys do that. So I appreciate the support.
Well, anytime. That's honestly that's what we're here for, and we love doing it. So we love to get out and support the music, and hope everybody else does too. So thank you so much. Keep releasing the
Sounds
new music.
Good. I appreciate it.
And we will talk to you soon.
All right. Have
Thank
a good
you.
One.
All right.
Guys.
You too. Thanks, Mike. Bye now.
Lay me down and wash me in your river. Traveled a long road, my past has taken its toll. Just get for me. One for me. Just give me a little bit. Just give me a little bit. Give me a little bit of what you want for me.
Yeah.